Welcome to Tech San Diego Spotlight. My name is Kevin Carroll. I'm the Executive Director of Tech San Diego, coming to you from technology's perfect climate, beautiful, sunny San Diego. So this podcast is going to be very, very interesting. I know that diversity is a buzzword, and one of the things that kind of recently has kind of spurned Tech San Diego to take a look at it is a report we did. We reviewed actually on a podcast, and we did a webinar on it. I think you could go to our YouTube channel and take a look at it on CBRE's Tech 30. And for the first time, they looked at diversity, and it wasn't pretty. And I was pretty shocked at some of the statistics that was in there. So that time I told them we were going to bring them back for a separate conversation. And that's what we're doing today. So first, I'm going to welcome back to Tech San Diego Spotlight Podcast, Colin Yasuguchi. Colin is the executive director for the CBRE Tech Insight Center, author of the CBRE Tech 30, numerous other papers and studies and trends that have to do with technology workers for CBRE. The smartest guy I know on talent tech trends, and we always turn to him. And joining Colin is also our board member from CBRE, Dennis Hurst, the VP at CBRE. Colin, Dennis, welcome to the podcast, or welcome back to the podcast, I should say.
Great, Kevin. It's good to be here. And I can tell you that it's actually very sunny in San Francisco today for a change as well. So we're in good company.
Hi, Kevin. And I am in sunny San Diego. It's a glorious day.
Well, Colin, it may be sunny, but it's windy and cold in San Francisco.
It certainly was that yesterday, and it would probably be that like that in the next few days as well. But I'm just basking in the sunshine that we do have today.
Sounds good. I was really taken aback by the statistics on this. For those of people who didn't get a look at the Tech 30, step us back for a second and give us kind of the 30,000 foot. What are the diversity statistics in the U.S. for tech look like currently?
Yeah, so, you know, when we looked at the diversity within the tech industry, what we focused most on was the diversity of the technical workers themselves. So people who actually are doing jobs that are technical in nature. And so that would be something like a software developer, you know, a hardware engineer, or maybe even a database type architect. And when we looked at that, what we found was that the majority of the tech talent in the tech industry was white, Asian, and male. So what that meant was that Hispanic, Black, and other races and ethnicities were underrepresented.
And women.
And females were very underrepresented, for sure.
When you mean underrepresented, give us a little type of comparison. Give us some actual statistics about what that looks like. And I think this is what, you know, when I saw these numbers, this is what really kind of threw me for a loop. But why don't you go ahead and tell us about some of those numbers?
Yeah. So when we were able to try to figure out what is underrepresented really mean, is that we had to have some sort of benchmark, right? So when we looked at the tech talent workforce in the U.S., we found that the Hispanic, Black, and other race and ethnicity group made up a total of 20% of the tech workforce. And then when you compared that to the U.S. as a whole, as it related to office using occupations, so think about financial services, professional services, the kinds of companies who use office space to run their business. Those same groups represented 26% of the total workforce. So tech was 6% underrepresented, 26 for office type businesses and 24 tech type businesses. And then when we looked at females, that was even more dramatic, because for general office using businesses, it was 51% were females. And then when you looked at it for tech, it was only 27%.
Ooh.
So that was a really big difference.
Yeah, that really stings. How does that mirror U.S. demographics as a whole? If 20% is what they represent of the U.S. demographics, then maybe it's not so bad. But what are the U.S. demographics as a whole compared to that diversity workforce?
Yeah. So when you say U.S. demographics as a whole, are you talking about just sort of the population in general or
population in general?
Yeah. So, the population in general is probably has a higher percentage of these underrepresented groups. So Hispanic, Black, non-Asian, non-white represent higher than the 26% that is measured in the U.S. workforce for office using occupations. The most fair comparison, because you're hiring similar type of individuals, was to look at the working population who work generally in office using businesses, as opposed to the population as a whole.
I think that's fair. One of the things that you could look at for future pipelines, since these are very educated workforces, is the diversity in universities. That's something that's near and dear to Tech San Diego's heart. We have a University Talent Initiative. We have a dedicated resource that's on the regional universities here in San Diego region to encourage students to make San Diego their career destination. And we're hoping that the greater diversity of the universities will result ultimately in a greater diversity of the workforce. Do you think that's, is that what you guys are seeing in the future pipeline?
We are to a certain extent, but if you compare, the diversity in tech versus the diversity at the university level for students who are pursuing tech degrees, it doesn't look that different. So the university pipeline is actually more diverse, but it's not diverse by a lot more. So the change that's occurring at the university level is going to be slowly working its way into the workforce. And that's going to slowly change the diversity metrics over time. So when you look at the diverse groups in the U.S. as a whole, they represent 23% of the workforce. I mean, of the recent university graduates. And so that, that compares to the 26% that it was for the U.S. as a whole. So it's a little bit less, but the females is probably, the one that's, again, the most big difference, because in the tech graduates, 25% of them are females, and 27% of the existing workforce is female. So it's actually less at the university level for the tech degree graduates.
That really is truly amazing, because you see such an emphasis on women in STEM, right? And I've been involved in some of those in the past. I've been involved in some of those efforts to get more women in STEM, and yet it just doesn't seem to be working, at least in the university pipeline.
Yeah, I mean, that's really a great question, one that I'm not really sure about, and it's a bit sort of perplexing. I've done some reading about that and, tried to better understand that from what the other experts had said. One of the common themes that I've read about has that in many of these more male dominated occupations, which STEM in general tends to be, that the, those industries tend to often have, working environments or cultures that maybe aren't quite as welcoming for women. And so they're not as apt to take up those kinds of careers. And I'm not quite sure how that all sort of works its way through. But I think the solution is really more around, starting to encourage younger people, both underrepresented ethnic and race groups, as well as females, to become more interested in STEM fields and to pursue STEM degrees and STEM employment. That needs to really go back further, maybe from the days when, you're in elementary school and your teacher asks you, "Hey, Kevin, what do you want to be when you grow up?" And during our time, that oftentimes was, "I want to be a doctor, a fireman, or something like that," right?
Well, if you look at the salary data that you put out for the, the Tech 30 on the average salary, they shouldn't want to be a doctor. They should want to be a software engineer. But I don't see many first graders that say, "I want to be an embedded engineer software or an iOS engineer." And I'm going to bring Dennis in the conversation here, too. So drilling down, so we looked at kind of this national stuff, drilling down a little bit to San Diego. Are there any anomalies that you're seeing in San Diego? I know we are very, you know, we're a border state. And so historically, we've had, our demographics have trended Hispanic more so than some other states. What do you see, A, in California, and then B, maybe even drilling down to San Diego?
So one of the questions I wanted to ask Colin was, are there some tech markets? I know California tends to be a higher overall Hispanic population, but much lower. I think we're 4.6% Black in California, and the national average is like 13.6%. Is there something about tech hub market cities, major employment centers for technology that varies by as much as the 2 to 6% that we're discussing here of people of color or non-white in those, I don't know, Boston, San Francisco, Seattle, D.C., that would explain some of that variation, even though I know the workforces are quite mobile?
Yeah. So, you know, when we looked at diversity across the country, there certainly are cities that have different compositions of their workforce. So when you think about the three underrepresented groups that I mentioned, Hispanic, Black, non-Asian, and non-white, that certain markets have much higher proportions of those particular groups. So like as an example, Atlanta and Washington, D.C. have a much higher proportion of Black population and Black in the tech talent workforce. From the Hispanic perspective, San Diego is actually not doing that badly because 14% of the tech workforce is Hispanic. But if you went to other markets like parts of Texas, whether that's like San Antonio or even Houston or South Florida, those numbers are in the, you know, 40 to 50% range. So it really depends upon what part of the country that you are in. And that's why many of the tech companies who are based in, you know, the Bay Area or Seattle for the most part, and even some tech companies and life sciences companies down in San Diego, when they are trying to diversify their workforce, they tend to look to these other markets to be able to accomplish that because it's difficult to do it in your headquarters market if the demographics aren't there, because the expectation of having individuals all move to where you're currently located is unrealistic in terms of trying to change the diversity makeup of your company.
Yeah, so one of the things
go,
that's
go ahead, Dennis.
Become a factor here in San Diego, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Over 2 million square feet of space has been leased really in the last 18 to 24 months. By the big four, the big five tech. So mostly Apple, but then if you throw in Google, Facebook, and Amazon, it's about 2 million square feet of office space leased. Most of that space is still being built out, or they haven't really started their major hiring push. So I'm wondering, that's an awful lot of workers, plus all the support companies that'll grow up to support them. I'm wondering if San Diego's going to have to import tech workers to fill those seats, whether part of the reason why somebody like Apple comes down here, not only to get Qualcomm talent perhaps, but also to offer people maybe a better climate, lower cost of living, and recruit them to move to San Diego from San Jose or the Bay Area. So that's an awful lot of hiring that's going to happen in San Diego in the next 2 years. And I'm wondering, where are they going to pull that talent pool from and how that's going to affect the overall results here?
Yes, I think there's really two sources for that, Dennis. Number one is in the local San Diego community, they will certainly be hiring from, you know, other tech companies, as well as potentially having people move from outside of the area to San Diego. Another source is going to be university graduates. Because when we look at the amount of tech degree graduates being created in the general San Diego region, it exceeds the number of jobs. So with these new offices opening and new job opportunities, more people are going to stay after they graduate from San Diego schools. And then the other aspect is because many San Diego graduates have had to leave the area to seek employment elsewhere, there's probably a big pool of them all around the country, especially on the West Coast, who would love to come back to sunny San Diego, right, Kevin?
Absolutely. I know the answer to this. I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I think it puts some context around our entire conversation. But why should we be looking at diversity? I mean, we're struggling to hire any jobs at all. Why should we take any kind of focus on on diversity? I think I know the answer to that. I do. But just to hear what you guys have found out in your research, why should we care about diversity in the workforce?
Well, I think, you know, when you think about diversity and how that impacts the products and services that you provide, you know, as a technology company or actually as any company, is that you get a lot more perspective and you're able to better understand all different groups, you know, that make up diversity. And diversity isn't necessarily just whether it's male or female or whether you're from a certain race or ethnicity. It really spans all kinds of different topics. And so the more diversity that you have within your company, you end up with a better product, a better set of ideas, a better sounding board, a better way to innovate than you would if you had, you know, a group of people who were thinking too similarly.
Absolutely. And I know there's been a lot of studies that has borne that out. So we talked a little bit about the challenge, the challenges of doing that and what it is. So how do we get ourselves out of this mess? What are other regions doing? What should San Diego region? I know the Tech San Diego is getting ready to embark on a major initiative on Hispanics in STEM that we'll be announcing. But going beyond what other organizations are going to do, what are some macro things that we should be looking at to improve those statistics and diversity?
Yes, I mean, I think it really starts with the tech industry itself. They know that there is a shortfall of qualified talent to be able to do the things that they want. So they're very incentivized to try to improve not only diversity, but also the quantity of tech workers. And so having them work more closely with educational institutions. And when I say educational institutions, I'm not talking about just colleges and universities and even like coding academies and those sort of things, but, you know, going further back, maybe even elementary schools where they're integrating some of their products and services among, you know, the youngest of our students and getting them interested in using those products and services or learning more about them or asking questions. Why, you know, how is this thing made? Kind of a thing, because we know that obviously young people are using these products and services like never before. And so I think that's, you know, certainly a way to do it, and providing job opportunities and being more proactive when it comes to trying to recruit diverse talent. And then I think another source too is that just because you don't have a tech degree doesn't mean you can't have a tech career, because you can learn a lot of that stuff. And so encouraging people who are already in the region or in the workforce to switch careers, potentially, if that's something that they want to do and they're interested in.
Well, we would certainly welcome as many tech workers as we can. I spent most of the morning talking to my senior manufacturing group about the lack of workforce, not only in the high-end jobs, but the low-end technology jobs as well. And I think increasingly, I think you're right, Colin, we're not just looking at the traditional four-year universities, but even the community colleges, which are, you know, the preponderance of people entering community colleges are Hispanic. Unfortunately, the dropout rate, Hispanics are our largest dropout rate. So making sure that we keep our future workforce in education and figuring out that path for them and helping eliminate what that path is would certainly seem to help. You know, I also think it's something we're going to be focusing on is the processes on hiring itself, right? How do you remove bias from the hiring process? How do you do these things? Because most of the companies, and Dennis, I'm not sure what you're hearing, but most of the companies, they do want to hire the best worker. What they would like is a pool to include more diversity, right? No one wants to hire someone just to hire because it fits a box. We want to try to, you know, make sure we have a diverse workforce, but ultimately they want the smartest, most innovative workforce. Diversity should be included in that, but the idea is how do you get more people in that pool? So I think the processes about diversity hiring itself and the mechanics of diversity hiring should seem to be important as well.
I'm going to sort of answer by asking a question. Colin, what's the percentage? Because the biggest discrepancy here is men versus women, not so much by race. It's off by 30%, but men versus women's off by 90 or 100%. You've studied the percentage of STEM graduates. Is just women are not feeling comfortable going into that environment, or they're not being attracted to that in college, or are they graduating with STEM degrees, but they're not, they're hitting a filter at the corporate hiring?
I mean, it's a combination of all things. If we look again, just to review the pure numbers, that 27% of the tech workforce are females. And coming out of college, they're 25% of the tech degree graduates. So there's a smaller percentage coming out of college than currently works in the existing workforce. So we can't assume that college degree graduates are going to improve those numbers. There is a long way to go when it comes to females in the tech workforce.
I think that's a good question, Dennis. I do think the pandemic certainly heightened those challenges of women in the workforce with healthcare, childcare challenges, and other things. I think, you know, one of the unfortunate circumstances of the pandemic was, you know, it took a lot of women out of the workforce. We hope they come back. Colin, have you seen any trend data that indicates that, you know, these are blips and that women in the workforce may come back a little stronger after the pandemic and people are going back to the classroom and childcare returns and schools are up and functional?
Yeah, it's too early to get hard data on that, but I'm also hopeful, like you are, that you know, we'll return to some sense of normalcy, and that women who want to be in the workforce can be in the workforce, and they don't have to bear the, you know, a higher burden of the caring for children and not being able to be in the workforce, because they're a huge and valuable resource that we need to have in the workforce.
Yeah, but, and I understand the challenge of childcare and how it probably falls disproportionately across the population on women as a primary home care providers. But if 51% of office workers are women, but only 27% of tech workers are women, you would think that they would be facing some of the same pressures of childcare and sort of recovery from COVID. So the one that jumps out at me is the difference in STEM degrees. And that probably does go back to grammar school or high school. Johnny wants to be a fireman and Mary wants to be a nurse or something like that. Maybe some social direction that's causing, because they're more than 50% of college graduates overall, maybe 54% are women. The dropout rate is less. So it seems like time is going to have to take, it's going to have to take some time. And it probably needs to start in high school, not just in college.
Yeah, it's a male-dominated field, and it's tough to get away from saying that, and that stings to say that, you know, but it is a male-dominated field, and, you know, we really need to, you know, as a group kind of collectively make sure that we're putting, for they also need role models, right? So we need to make sure that we're putting forward those, the population of females, successful females in tech field, and kind of proffering them as you know, here are some success stories, and you know, you could be just like this person, and that's gonna, you know, that's gonna take some work, and I think you're right, it's just gonna take some time.
Well, it wasn't that long ago that law was dominated, medicine was dominated, architecture was dominated by males. They seem to have done a much more parallel to the population evolution in workforce than tech.
We're coming up, running out of time around our podcast. So I think collectively we all have to do this. You know, we all have to have this on our radar screen. We all have to think about how we could each do our little part. And certainly I'm glad to see CBRE is doing their part. I thought it was brilliant to add this into the Tech 30, because I think as companies are looking into where they want to go, this increasingly becomes a factor in site selection. And so I thought it was really smart, Colin, for you to put this in the Tech 30. Are you getting a similar response from other regions?
We are. I mean, so it's been a big driver, and it actually helps both tech employers and real estate investors. Helps the tech employers know where these diverse populations are located, and it helps real estate investors understand, you know, where the flow of growth might be occurring as companies try to tap into more diverse workforces across the country.
Well, I know that we're committed, and I think Dennis could speak for the Tech San Diego Board of Directors. We're committed to seeing more diversity in the regional workforce. We're working with diversity clubs on campus and some other groups to try it again. We're trying to get that pool. We're going to work on some women in STEM projects. So certainly we're committed to make sure that there's more diversity. Go to techsd.org. We're going to have some events coming up on technology diversity. Specifically, the first one's going to be on hiring, and that's going to be followed by creating a culture of inclusion. So once we get that diverse workforce, we're able to keep them. Dennis, anything else before we, any other questions or anything else before we let Colin get on his merry way and dig back into his spreadsheets?
No, I think this has been a great treatment of the subject, and I look forward to, I guess, a year from now, we'll see if there's any changes or any perceptible changes. But let's tell everybody, or Colin, why don't you tell everybody exactly how they can get a hold of your research?
Dennis and Kevin, it was really great being here with you today. And if anyone wants to see further research, they can go to cbre.com research and be able to find all the great things that we put out.
I strongly recommend. I go there all the time. I always pick up tidbits. I visit it at least once a week to see what Colin and his team is putting up there new. So again, thank you. Thank you, Dennis. And we will see you on the next Tech San Diego podcast. We're out.
Since 1994, Tech San Diego has provided a unifying voice for San Diego's technology community, fostering growth and business acceleration through collaborations between industry, education, and government. We support members from all sectors of the technology industry, including cybersecurity, big data, robotics, SaaS, biotech, healthcare, Internet of Things, defense, telecom, and more. Learn more about us at www.techsandiego.org. Tech San Diego would like to thank Colin Yasukochi and Dennis Hurst for returning to the show for this important discussion. CBRE is a member of Tech San Diego, and we love working with them to bring you commentary on these reports. Visit cbre.com/research for more information. Producers for Tech San Diego Spotlight are Kevin Carroll and Sarah Spiva. TSD Spotlight is recorded remotely and edited by Hypable Impact. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, make sure to like, follow, and share.